The name of our podcast, Tech Sequences, is really a mashup of two words, technology and consequences. We are fascinated by the consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and related technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives. I'm Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle.
And we are here today to talk about the elephant in the room, which is COVID. Since we started doing our podcast, something really monumental happened. Perhaps something that those who lived through World War II may find some parallel experiences. The whole country, in fact, the whole world has gone into shelter at home, and it really has impacted the way we live, we work, we play, everything. So we thought that it would be worthwhile to just have a conversation to talk about how has this really impacted, has COVID impacted the way we use technology and the other way around as well. So Leslie, what do you find really interesting and kind of different in the way and how COVID has really changed our lives and our use of technology?
So the really odd thing is that for me, COVID-19 actually has had relatively little impact on my day-to-day life. This is not to say I haven't had my sleepless nights. This is not to say I'm not worried about everybody in my family and so on and so forth. But for those of us that work from home regularly, there are ways in which it hasn't had a huge, obvious impact. But I recognize I'm in the very, very tiny minority of the world at this point. I do think it's interesting to look at the ways in which technology and our technology lifestyle have sort of brought this down on the world and how technology is helping us cope with it, so to speak. And, you know, I've mentioned that 100 years ago, approximately, the Spanish flu, the last time there was a serious pandemic, not dissimilar to this one, but a very different experience for people because in part technologies were different, because people didn't move around quite the same way, because they didn't communicate with quite as much richness as we do now with, you know, video chats across the globe, and because, you know, sharing of knowledge was harder for the same reason, because there was a lack of communications abilities.
Well, I'm just curious to know how many virtual happy hours you've had.
Just one. The cats, on the other hand, have been, you know, eating up the bandwidth, but.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think in a way, the fact that we already had some move towards people working from home, like folks like yourself and even myself, and the fact that we had technology like video conferencing, it has made things, at least the transition to working from home, easier. Social media has enabled us to keep in touch and at least try to preserve some semblance of normalcy, if that can be said. But, you know, it struck me that everything about the way things are designed is really designed for a world where we understand that population is going to go up and it's designed for close proximity. I mean, think about it. I was watching a movie the other day and, you know, people were sitting in this plane and I was almost having a panic attack thinking, oh my God, they're sitting so close together, you know, like what? They don't have masks and whatnot. But that's how we lived, you know, public transportation, transit, everything, movie theaters, stadiums. Everything is really designed for very close contact, and we can't escape it because the world population, you know, continues to go on the up and up. And so, you know, I believe that this won't be the last one that we will experience in our lifetime. And how are we going to cope? I don't think we'll ever go back to quote unquote normal. In other words, the way life was.
Oh, I don't know.
You don't think so?
Never say never. I mean, I understand what you're getting at, and that that we've all learned to wash our hands a lot more carefully, and yeah. And there's a lot
I
less
have a soft spot for
going
OCD
on.
People now.
but I mean, I think that the reality is that I think that some things will be different than they were before, but I wouldn't care to predict what. I think that, you know, people are anxious to get back to the lifestyles that they know. It's not just about density of population and so on. I think it's also, we live in a world that is we built a world that's nonstop, right? Mm. We have, since the middle of the last century, had the luxury of being able to build systems where, for instance, you know, you could have a supply chain that spanned multiple continents, and you know, with the advent of technology and, you know, computers and computers communicating, you could have a really tuned supply chain so that you never had too much stock building up in any one place. Mm. And now that's all coming down on our heads, right? Because where the heck is that toilet paper?
Right. I don't know if we ever established which amongst us is the, I guess I am the more pessimist and you're the more optimist, which is kind of weird because you would imagine like the techie would be the pessimist and quote unquote the marketing, you know, business person would be the optimist.
I think I just wrapped around the circle and was like, if I lived with my actual pessimism, I might as well go dig a hole in the backyard. So I choose to find optimism.
Well, all right. Well, so I think we agree that life necessarily won't go exactly the way it was. And there will certainly be some changes, longstanding changes. Let's talk about what kinds of changes this will mean, at least in terms of technology. I'll start. I think, you know, when you think about just encryption, the way that we actually use authentication and encryption right now, you know, fingerprints are so important, right? And that the assumption there, the inherent assumption is that this is an in-person type of thing. I think this could potentially push us to adopt biometric identification, things that can be done just remotely, like facial recognition and iris recognition, you know, that doesn't necessarily have to be fingerprint. And a lot of government services, if you think about it, are really based on your fingerprint ID, you know, justice and I think DMV and God knows what else.
Which is scary.
What do you think?
Which is scary if you consider just how hard it is to get your fingerprint ID computer to.
Yeah, right.
And certainly if you live somewhere where that you have seasons and your fingers dry up in the winter.
Right.
Oh, it's me. Press.
Well, right now my hands are just absolutely a mess because
yeah.
Scrubbed raw.
Yeah.
So I don't think I possess any fingerprints anymore. But what do you think? What other kinds of impacts do you think long-term impacts this could have?
To be honest, I'm kind of more worried about what kind of business impacts there will be because an awful lot of the small businesses are being just pushed over, right? I mean,
yes.
So I think when we see the dust settle there, I question whether or not it will be as easy for individuals to, in this country, to start up their own businesses and make a go of it.
Right.
I mean, all the technology tools are there. So, you know, that's not a consequence of technology. That's a function of, you know, anybody who is a freelancer right now is in free fall, right? If they've got any kind of a business that relies on, you know, contracts with other people, they are in free fall, whether you're a performer, whether you're a photographer, whatever.
Right, doesn't matter.
And so now what do you do? What do you do on the other side of this? Do you say, right, well, I'll go reestablish my contracts and whatnot? Or do you say, I'm going to go flip burgers and get a paycheck?
Well, okay. So I'm going to switch places with you. I'm going to be the optimist now. And it's paining me to do that, but
try it on for size.
I know I'm going to try it on for size. I think there are some areas where it could potentially, at least for some entrepreneurs, provide an opportunity. I'll pick, let's say Internet of Things. And to be really exact, I mean, right now we're really stressing over who has it, you know, how do we know, how do we isolate them? So I think if we had more advanced smart devices. Now that, by the way, that brings its whole issue of privacy and security. So I'll put that to the side. But
foreshadowing, we have a great episode that talks about that stuff.
That's right.
And that'll be along presently.
But I think if we think about, you know, smart devices, if those smart devices could actually continue to report about our health, at least the very specifics about how this virus is moving through the community, and be able to, and big data, right, combined, be able to help us analyze and quickly isolate those individuals who might not show any symptoms, but who might actually spread the disease, that could be a good thing. And I think it will, the entrepreneurs who are able to provide that kind of services, so interesting IoT devices, smart devices that are related to health, big data services that help us quickly analyze, you know, spread of something through the community, that would be a plus. And I think that's an opportunity. You know, I think you're right. A lot of gig workers, like you mentioned, folks who are really dependent on this, it's the drivers, you know, those guys are, it's a tough business. It's a hard business. And, you know, it's a low paying job. And I think those jobs may go away, but there could be an opportunity for drones, right? Drone delivery. Now, the guy who was operating as a delivery driver is not going to be the one who's going to have a drone business. So that kind of, I'm going to slip back into my pessimistic mode. I think this is going to really further exacerbate the division of the haves and the have-nots.
Oh, I think that's true. And that's in part why I worry about the small businesses and whatnot, because they're in some ways least likely to have the wherewithal to weather this. But sort of stepping out of that particular quagmire, and let's take a look at this. Let's take a look at some of the challenges that we face today, right? I mean, as it stands, there's actually a relatively low number of people in the population that have the disease and are dying from it, right? And again, I don't mean to be in any way callous, feeling for each and every one of them, and certainly scared myself about contracting it. But what we're really grappling with is how, to your point about how can we identify people who are at risk, or who are carrying it, or, you know, whatever. Going forward, how can we manage an environment where you can have confidence that you can enter an environment and not be subjecting yourself to some kind of exposure, right? That you're not ready for.
I went to the, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're going to say what I was going to say, which is you went to the grocery store.
Yes. And you know what? I was living my science fiction dream. I wanted to have glasses that would like pinpoint the hot zones, like where somebody was who had the virus. I mean, granted, I think that comes from, you know, anxiety and God knows what else, but that's the kind of data I think you're talking about. That's the kind of, you know, information that could save lives.
Right. And so if we had reliability of knowing that, if we had, I mean, of course, the big question is understanding how to treat the disease, having effective ways of treating it, other than ventilators, for which apparently there's only a 20%. If you go on a ventilator, there's only a 20% chance you'll actually recover. And also how to prevent, you know, how to vaccinate against it, how to prevent.
But you know, you're not like making me feel better with my anxiety and pessimism, right?
But the good news is that very bright minds are working on this, and back to technology, because we have the ability to communicate and share data and share information. There is a lot of data real time about how the pandemic is spreading in different parts of the world. I mean, back to the Spanish flu example from 1918. I mean, nobody had this kind of real time data about where there were outbreaks.
True.
So it's not just the officially designated people who are studying these things and trying to understand it. The whole world is looking at this data. And creative people are already demonstrating their ability to be flexible. Everything from companies who are retooling to build personal protective equipment for hospitals, you know, 3 weeks ago, they were making hockey face masks. Mm-hmm. Now they're making face masks for hospital wear to people who are doing 3D printed stuff.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, and the instant somebody figures out how to turn a handkerchief into a usable face mask, it's all over the internet and everybody can benefit from it. So, you know, here's be cheered by the fact that, although we've heard the timeline for sort of the standard, how can you solve these problems? There's a lot more attention than the standard amount of attention being focused on trying to find answers or find ways to cope.
You know, I think you mentioned sort of having all this data that informs better decision making, and it makes me think, you know, for example, with stay at home orders, right? If there were data that would identify who are the miscreants who actually are not, you know, obeying those orders and going out.
Do you want us to all wear ankle bracelets?
Well, I mean, it then begs the question that are we going to become a police state? In other words, if you had that kind of information, on the one hand, it is very helpful because you can pinpoint, you know, those people who are most likely to spread it and who are not complying. But on the other hand, you're actually setting the, you know, setting the stage for a potential police state. And I recall from our upcoming podcast what Mark Rotenberg talked about, which was, you know, once you, it's a slippery slope. Once a state has been given a particular remit to do something with this data, they typically don't tend to hand it back.
Right.
They tend to find other uses for it.
Right. And so that would be a consequence of that particular kind of technology. And I would back us out of that direction by pointing out that we need to rely a lot on the fact that we are still humans, for good or for ill. So yes, it does mean that, you know, the spring breakers were spring breaking in Florida long past the point at which they should have been, you know, practicing their duck and cover. But on the other hand, you and I were just looking at the data from Google's mobility, COVID-19 mobility studies, and looking at the data that they have for Florida, which has been sort of a hotspot in this country for, you know, failure to implement mandated stay-at-home rules and whatnot until the very last moment. And yet, if you look at the data, clearly people have been staying home for at least as long as places where it's been mandated. Because while there are clearly people who are not willing to, you know, to stop or slow down, there are other people who are sensible and looking at it like, I'm not going out. Are you crazy?
Right, right.
So that all that to say that maybe we should be focusing more again on the use of technology for informing people, because it turns out, you know, as a whole, people can be kind of sensible if you give them the right data.
Well, you know, we are now living in what somebody called the post-truth world, right? And so, you know, even though technology can help us provide great information and great data, which wasn't the case in 1918, right? The great flu epidemic. It also has the potential to provide the wrong set of data, right? Misinformation, and which can then cost lives, right? I mean, you know, all these like alternative cures or things that are not necessarily rooted in fact and science. And, you know, social media has the potential to keep us connected and certainly entertained, but at the same time, I still see all sorts of weird, you know, potential cures being touted.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't solved the problem of social media.
Yeah, but, well, we have you and I have not, yes.
Yeah,
we'll tackle that next.
but I mean, I think the I think that on the whole, more information is better, and having access to information is better than trying to channel it. So here's a little factoid. Why is it the Spanish flu from 1918? It was not, in fact, a Spanish flu. It didn't start in Spain. It actually started in the U.S. And it was largely transmitted by the people who were most moving at that time, namely soldiers. And the reason that it got called the Spanish flu, as I understand it, is because Spain was not at war, and they had, you know, functioning press that could actually talk about this thing that was crippling their population. Whereas this was the sort of thing that you, managing your communications outlets, did not let get published in newspapers in the U.S. and so on and so forth. So
interesting.
Not only was it a technology not what it is today in terms of in terms of communications, it also was a case that it was much more constrained. And ultimately, you know, historians can answer the question of whether that kind of constraint of information helped or hindered in the cause of solving that pandemic.
Right. You know, I on a lighter note,
please.
I have never seen, which is hard in these times, granted, but I have never seen so much, you know, sort of funny memes come out about people's ability to be able to cope with being effectively shut-ins, right? And it sort of gives, you talked about, you know, what it means to be human. And I think it's one of our coping mechanisms that, you know, when the day is dark and the nights are long, you find some respite, some way of finding humor in your predicament.
Yep.
There was a funny little video I'll show you. It says, you know, me and the missus trying to self-isolate, and there's these two dogs that will like snipe at each other, and it's the funniest thing you've seen. Yet, you know, it basically describes, you know, what some right. people are probably feeling being cooped up at home.
Oh, I think that the one area, I predict that one market that will actually see a boom is real estate, because I think a lot of people are going to be looking for larger homes.
You know,
I mean, less yeah. fluently. I mean, well, here are people who, you know, two working parents and four kids, all of a sudden.
God help me.
Yeah. All of a sudden, they're all at home all the time, right?
But imagine having to homeschool your kid while working.
Yeah. I see it every day. And, yeah, so
there's going to be a lot of, I don't know, maybe in I don't know the quality of homeschool education, I'm curious to find out in a couple of years, are we going to have a bunch of miscreants who were, you know, misadventured or miseducation, or are we going to have a set
yeah, what was that, speaking of funny memes, that was one that was circulating rather early on, was day three of the quarantine and homeschooling, and suddenly you realize that the teacher wasn't the problem.
That's right. I think the one who actually has, at least on the, again, trying to look on the bright side, the ones who have benefited most from this, I will say, are the pets, because they can now enjoy. I know my dog has, she now has me pretty much round the clock at home. And when I do go for a walk, it's like a shock. It's like, what are you doing? How dare you now leave my sight? You've been here, you know, tending to my every move.
Yep.
What other final thoughts, I think? What do you think?
I think it'll be really interesting to look back on this in 12 months and see what has changed or and what hasn't. So we should put a pin in the diary for a year from now and see what actually does change, and then maybe annually thereafter. I think you're right that this is not the last of these. But I mean, we can't plan for every eventuality, although I'm sure there are some people whose bathrooms will be stocked from now until eternity with toilet paper, given how much has disappeared off the shelves.
I will tell you, I have never seen, I think one of my friends mentioned this, and I think it's so funny. She said, I've never seen so many people wish awful diarrhea on those who have hoarded toilet paper.
Well, yeah.
Well, I think it definitely is a seminal moment in all of our lives, and one that, like you said, we will certainly go back to and very vividly remember how we found out, when we found out, and how we lived our lives during those days. And the difference here is that it's very hard to tell what the future looks like.
Well, part of the real challenge here, and for myself, I think the worst week was around the 9th of March or so here. In the U.S., because that was when the wheels were really starting to fall off everything. Mm. And every day you got up and it was another thing that you never could have imagined having happened, happening, you know, right. Whether it was you know, banning flights coming in from elsewhere, banning flights anywhere, banning, well, okay, so that hasn't happened much. Whether it was, I mean, closing the Canadian-US border, can you imagine? Yeah. I certainly could not imagine that. And that one, I mean, that hit home for me because, you know, here I am in the US, my mom lives in Canada, and, you know, we were supposed to go visit that weekend. And, on the Tuesday, it was a rational thing to think, we'll go visit mom, you know, because I don't know when we'll get a chance again. By Wednesday, it was starting to look dicey because, you know, there were discussions of, you know, don't travel. And then by Thursday, it was like, yeah, no.
Right. And right. By Saturday, mm-hmm.
And by Saturday, in fact, where she lives, they were not accepting visitors. So we never would have even gotten in to see her if we'd gone to visit. So it was that sense of, how can this happen? Right.
Yes.
And
right.
And so now if things you couldn't imagine happening have happened, how can you put boundaries on your expectations of what will happen? You know, how can you say, well, you know, and I think that's part of the most stressful thing.
Good point.
All right. But we need to go out on a high note.
I
brought us down again.
So I think on a high note, I think that this actually underscores for me how interconnected we all are, not just us as individuals. You know, the actions of one person impact the livelihoods and the well-being of so many others, and not just us as human beings, but, you know, our regular traffic patterns, our regular, you know, lives have impacted things for better and for worse across the entire world. I mean, the organization, the Elephant Sanctuary that I supported, they had to close their doors because there's no tourists, and therefore they're really trying to figure out how they can feed all of these elephants and other animals. And on the other hand, you have, you know, skies clearing above Beijing because the pollution is reducing. All of the airplanes that were going back and forth and the carbon emissions have drastically reduced. So maybe we are actually buying ourselves some time from, you know, a little bit of time from global warming. So we're all are connected no matter what we think.
Yep. At the end of the day, technology is awesome. And I'm certainly glad that we've got all of the communications technologies to be able to stay in touch with people. I'm still talking with my mom regularly. But at the end of the day, what really matters is that we're humans and our pets are people too.
That's right. Great talking to you as always, Leslie.
Indeed, Alexa.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod, and you can reach us by email, techsequences@techsequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this podcast or ideas for future episodes.